Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is episode number 54. I am sitting here. I am the only person in the Chaos Group office because it's New Year's Eve and I'm trying to figure out what I need to do tonight to celebrate the new year. By the time you guys hear this, it'll already be 2016. So hopefully you all had a great new year. This podcast is something that we kind of needed to do right away. And so we put it out there. It is with Emmanuel Lichi. And if I don't pronounce your name correctly, Emmanuel, sorry, because I don't ever call him Emmanuel. I call him Lele. And if any of you guys know who Lele is, and if you guys have ever been on any forum related to V-Ray, you all know who Lele is. He's been around for a very long time. He's now working with Chaos Group and has been doing some amazing stuff with Vlado in terms of testing some of the newest features that we've been doing and getting a lot of stuff done in terms of the new V-Ray features. So we figured this is a podcast for all of you V-Ray fans out there, hardcore V-Ray stuff. You want to know about what's going on in Server Spec 3. You want to know about all these new features that are available and what they're about and how they're important they are. This is a podcast for you guys. Hopefully you guys will enjoy it. It is really cool. It's the first time I actually did a podcast with over Skype. Lele is over in Italy, so we talked to him over in Italy. So the audio quality is not that great, but we're going to get better about that. Lele and I will figure it out. And we'll probably try to do more of these as they come up. If you guys want to hear more of these types of podcasts, let us know. We'll try to get a few more out there when the information becomes important for us to share. All right, guys. Hopefully you guys all had a great New Year's Eve and that you guys had a good New Year's. And I'm really looking forward to a whole new series of great podcasts coming out this year. Remember to post online any questions you guys have. Review us. If you're on iTunes, remember to rate the episodes that you guys like, as well as rate and review the podcast itself. I really appreciate it. All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
Welcome to another CG Garage where the Chaos Group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're gonna fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passe. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, you need to make sure everything has Fresnel.
When did you start at Chaos Group? Because I kind of didn't know. I mean, I know who you are, obviously. Go ahead.
I actually started in disguise at Chaos in early May.
Okay.
Because, well, I'm aging just as everyone else, and I was being pushed and pulled to go somewhere else again.
Sure.
Very far away, doing the same stuff all over again, because, as you know, each company keeps the stuff you prepare for them for themselves. Mm-hmm. And so every job is going back to the same stuff and doing the same things. And I was getting bored. And I didn't want to go to, say, Shanghai for a year or something.
Okay.
Or go back to silly working hours in America or whatever. I basically cried at Vlado's shoulder going, what the hell? What am I going to do with this? I'm sick of doing it all over again. And half jokingly, I said, do you not need somebody like me to do the stuff for you? I write the same scripts I write for everyone and just give it to you and you can use it.
Right.
And to my incredible surprise, his reply was, yes, actually we do.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, that's great. So you kind of started at a, you know, sort of as a freelance here and there doing some quick projects. And then now you became a Chaos Group employee. Is that correct?
The only thing we actually needed to find out was the contractual agreement and time.
Okay.
To not have me move to Sofia, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And to make sure that we didn't break any European laws or tax things and so on and so forth.
Sure, yeah.
And so it was built as a freelance one-off at the start,
Until all of that got figured out.
Exactly. Then I went to Sofia and we spoke with the lawyers and did all the things. And it's, yeah,
we can now say that we have an Italian office, right?
Yes, yes. You can say that we have a very small, very naturally looking, natural looking.
Well, with David, we have a San Francisco office. So, where in Italy are you, Lele?
I am I'm in Emilia, which is where Ferrari, Lamborghini, Ducati, the big brands are. In fact, most of those brands were born from simple farmers. Lamborghini was making tractors.
Right.
And of course, around here is all lush and green. And I actually used the beautiful unpolluted skies I've got here for reference for the Hosek model.
Oh, nice. Well, we'll get into that because that's part of the topics we're going to talk about today. But have been, let me just sort of to put in perspective who you are. You've been using V-Ray for probably almost as long as I have, if not as long as I have. You've been using it.
Yeah. Was out in 2001.
Yeah, so you've been using it that long, and you have been a part of that, the one of the original people on the forum, as well as a major, major contributor to the beta testing for a long time, right?
Yes, actually, I encrypted them, those scripts, because the code was so terrible. But I started actually scripting because of V-Ray.
Okay.
I wanted to automate some tasks, and one of the good things of V-Ray at the start especially was that it had very, very powerful tools, but it wasn't quite working as a thing at the start. So it wasn't a whole. It was a bit more scattered. So, for instance, you had the physical camera, but you had to take the focus point roughly by eye, and that would take you a long render to figure out if you did it right or not, and so on. And so I thought, well, can I not make an autofocus? And so I went online figuring out how DSLRs make an autofocus, and they scripted one for the physical camera, and the same for the exposimeter when we edit.
Right.
Or, for instance, the sun texture map back in the day, we're talking about Max 8, 2007, something like this, 2006 even. You couldn't see the V-Ray sky as a background, so it was hit and miss. And so I went in and hacked until it worked. Incredibly, when I put those things on the forums, incredibly to me, they were actually a big success.
Yeah. Did you make a web? Do you have a website of all that stuff?
No, I actually delegated them to ScriptSpot. They're still out there.
Okay.
I mean,
so maybe we should probably give people a link to that so people can check those out. Are they still valid today or?
No, but some of them, the good news is that some of them have been rewritten.
Uh-huh.
Since the autofocus is rewritten, I suppose after the push for SP3 is done, Vlado and others will have time to look at it and see if it's good enough.
Right.
But that is able to autofocus every camera in the scene with one button press. I tried it on very, very polygon heavy scenes and it works instantly. It's like for 25 million polygons in the scene, it took less than a second.
Right.
So it's quick. It's really quick. Okay. After the push is done, perhaps we'll work out a way to distribute them as well. The exposimeter is another one on the list because all the automatic exposure and real-time stuff, people seem to be wanting to use the photographical metaphor a lot. So they really want camera areas.
And I actually think that, to be honest, I think what's going to become interesting is, especially in the field of some of our other fields, that like V-Ray for Revit and V-Ray for SketchUp, we want to push that metaphor of photography almost to the point and shoot level, right? So they just go, here you go, and then boom, you know, it's done. It just looks like it's
and
very...
And actually, helps in that respect a lot, because for all the scripts I could write, the latest script I wrote was an attempt at an intelligent optimizer of scenes. And it was so complex.
Right.
to not so much writing it. It was figuring out the heuristics, turning algorithms.
Right.
And while it worked for some scenarios, let's say the vast majority of scenarios, that was a big failure when it went on the forums. Some users were doing things very peculiarly, and the script would make the renders go very slow. They look good, but they would go very slow instead of going fast.
Right.
And so it was important that Chaos Group made a push in the direction from the V-Ray 3 code.
Right.
They did. Yeah. So we're very close now to be able to point and shoot.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I think it's going to be there. And this is something I want to talk about with some of our guys, because I think it's a different kind of audience that I think would appreciate that. But let's go back to something that, obviously, since you started at the company, one of the biggest things that you've been working on directly with Vlado is testing some of the very brand new things that have been going on, which is released in Service Pack 3, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Chiefly, it was about the sampler.
Yeah, so let's go into that a little bit, because I think this podcast is mainly about Service Pack 3, which is coming out through 3D Studio Max and shortly for Maya as well. But there are some major features that are added to this that are completely going to change the way, especially the new sampler, which I'm going to get into. Obviously, you and I talked about it for a while yesterday, and we want to try to give people just an idea of what's important about it. But this is going to change a lot of how people use V-Ray, and it's going to have to involve a little bit of a mindset change in some cases. And this is, again, it's a service pack release, so it is free. It's not V-Ray 4, it's Service Pack 3. So besides, even beyond the sampler, there's other major features we want to talk about that are coming out in V-Ray Service Pack 3. So big, big deal, Service Pack, right?
Yeah, I don't know why he's obstinate in just releasing it as a service pack. I think everyone in
that's Vlado's prerogative. I think, you know, this is the advantage you get when you have our product. Yes. Is the fact that you get major release things over the course.
Yes. So everyone would not have a problem with saying this is a full release.
Yeah, I know, but let's talk about it anyway, because I mean, obviously, these are decisions that Vlado makes, and this is a really good one.
We all have it for it.
Yeah, and we're, you know, at this point, it's, you know, it's a, you know, let's just say happy holidays, everyone. Here's a new service pack.
Yes,
right,
exactly. Thank you, that's your Christmas
gift. Right. So variance-based adaptive sampling is what we're calling the new variance-based adaptive sampling method. It's kind of a big deal. So for people to understand this, let's sort of start with the perspective, because I think you and I came up with some really great analogies yesterday to think about it. V-Ray goes out there and it throws, or any rendering engine out there, throws out a bunch of samples in a random pattern out there and collects these samples and then gets back a noise and then adds more samples where it needs more samples and continues to do this and refine this.
I compare ray tracers these days very much like a blind person trying to play dots.
Right, right. So the way that our adaptive sampling works is that it adds more samples in areas that need it and then adds less samples in areas that don't need it, which is the idea of...
shooting out with a bucket shot. Pellets, and then looks at the target and goes, I hit something here and I didn't hit anything here.
Right.
So I'm trying more.
Exactly. And so part of that discussion, actually, we had this in another podcast that actually came out this week, but this one will be a few weeks later. So go back to a few podcasts and look at the podcast with Doug Robel. We actually talk about the algorithm for important sampling, right? So that was a really big podcast that basically talked about why that's important and where it came from, et cetera. So the adaptive sampling is very important in the V-Ray side of things. But if you may, and a lot of people are familiar, if those of you who've used V-Ray in the past, you'll know specifically some of these issues that you have had where you would look at an image and you'd say, look, so the image looks pretty good, but I'm getting a bunch of noise in the dark areas, or I'm getting a bunch of noise in the glossiness and the highlight, or, you know, something, the glossiness always looks noisy or whatever it is. So there's always the idea that now something important to note is that V-Ray sees, technically speaking, V-Ray sees all the noises even, but our eyes, and this is something that I think was important that you and I discussed, our eyes sees more noise in those areas than V-Ray sees. Obviously, V-Ray doesn't know that, or the old V-Ray didn't know that. It just continued to add noise to areas that, or continued to add samples to areas that it thought was important. What this new variance-based adaptive sampling does is it actually sees noise closer, perceives noise closer to the way that our eyes see noise. Is that a good way to describe it? Yeah.
Yes, very good. I mean, what he did before, somehow when he was going to the target to check where he shot, he would just kind of figure out if the hole was big enough. Not so much where it was, but not so much where it was in relation to everything else, but it was just going, oh, yeah, that's a big shot. I'll try and hitting it more. That's a big hole. I'll try and hitting it more to make it larger. Mm-hmm. New sampler, in a way, is able to figure out the position of where it should shoot. So with each iteration, let's think of the progressive renderer because it's a simpler analogy to. We can see the passes, so we can see what V-Ray is doing.
Yeah. So it almost looks like it gets cleaner faster, like way cleaner, way faster, right?
It knows right away. After a couple of bucket shots, it knows where the target is and where it's shooting.
Right.
So right away, it's still shooting the same amount of rays and or projectiles, pellets. Mm-hmm. It just knows much quicker where it needs to shoot them. So this scatter gun approach only works for the first couple of passes. And then... progressively, it refines where it wants to clean up.
Yes.
And the very big part that you mentioned is that human vision, in general, all of human perception, so touch and taste and smell and so on, but perception, visual perception in particular.
Is contrast-based. It's contrast-based.
Exactly. It's demonstrated to work on contrast. However, the contrast is perceived... in relation to something else.
Right.
We can't look at something and go, this is that bright. You probably remember, and the listeners must have seen, the little optical trick of the checkerboard, half in shadow, half in light.
Okay.
Where the two squares are exactly the same color. However, in light, they are the dark squares. In dark, they're the bright ones.
Mm-hmm.
The color that you can pick is exactly the same. Your brain reads the image very differently because the variance, and here we go to the keyword, not the absolute value, the size of the hole, but the variance, what happens to one pixel compared to the neighboring ones in percentage. That is the keyword, percentage.
So we're going to get to that in a second because I think people just need to sort of grasp the idea that I want them to do is grasp the idea that this is a new way of looking at sampling and that using the exact same amount of sample, the perceived image looks way cleaner.
Yes.
Okay.
Because the samples are put based on variance.
On variance. Right.
And variance is the way perception works.
And this is very much a biased system. We should also note that. And the advantage it has is because it biases its samples based on the perceived variance, as you say. And that is why bias rendering can sometimes be a huge advantage in terms of speed, right?
That's the point.
And so one of the other thing I wanted to... Yeah.
And as biased as you want, but it's not... A V-Ray user would tell you it's not a clever way to go about it.
No, I know. And so this is another important part I want to make because one of the things that people describe between bias and unbiased is that unbiased is more accurate and you have less settings, so there's less things to mess around with. And they're saying, well, in unbiased renderers, you have more settings to try to fine-tune things and you'll be faster, but it won't be as accurate. So here, it's actually we're going the other way in a sense that it's even more bias in a sense, but we actually are removing more variables for people to deal with at the same time because V-Ray is actually becoming smarter where the user doesn't have to actually worry about things, right?
Yes, indeed. That was the holy grail of my working in VFX, trying to get something that worked entirely automatically. I didn't want to know which shot it was and which was the artist.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted the shot on the farm looking exactly like everyone else. And this is important. Vlado made amazing small changes sometimes, but amazing under the hood.
Right.
And so really you can pick up any of your old scenes today, load them up, reset the settings so they're very easy into the new mode for SP3.
Right.
And press render. Now, and you can rest assured that they will not fail you.
No. And so this is the important thing. So what are the things that happen? And let's go through these real quick. If you say use the new settings, so this is the way it happens, right? You open up an old scene, right? And the old scene, let's say you had tweaked the crap out of it, right? You had put certain subdivisions on lights, on different reflection glossiness levels. You'd put all these things to try to optimize your scene, and it was a big pain in the butt to do that, right?
Oh, hell.
Yeah, because most of your time is like, oh, this is a little noisy here, so I have to increase the subdivisions on this. This is a little noisier here. I have to cut the subdivision on this. Using this new method, it turns off all of those subdivisions, right?
Entirely. They are all discarded.
So all light subdivisions, all reflection subdivisions, everything that's done on a per material or per light level is removed, right?
Actually, it's grayed out. It's still there. And the beauty of it is it's one checkbox.
Right. There is one you can turn it on and you can turn it off.
It says ignore local subdivisions.
Right. So
grayed out, nothing gets changed in your scene, but they grayed out to show you that they're not considered.
Right.
And on top of that, for those that really want to see how many rays we cast before the render starts, all of those settings will still show you, based on your render settings, what the number of rays will be. However, they will not be taken into account in terms of subdivisions.
Right.
The whole setup is done from the one panel of the anti-aliasing.
Right. Theory. Okay, so that's pretty cool. Cool feature. Now, the other thing I think is important here this is the thing that people are going to have to realize. Okay, so one is this new sampler. When you open V-Ray in Service Pack 3, it's going to be the message is going to come up when you open an old scene, right?
Yes.
It's going to tell you, do you want to use the new settings or do you want to keep it to the old sampler? You know,
exactly.
and if you were delivering a show or whatever, and you want everything to look consistent, you probably want to keep it to the old sampler. But if you have an old thing and you want to say, hey, I want to see how much cleaner and faster it's going to look, then you can apply the new settings, right?
Exactly. Paramount in times of change is to leave people with a choice.
Right.
So in good Chaos Group style, Vlado isn't forcing the change on anybody.
Right. That's good. But I think people should really, really, really consider this. And what's going to happen is that they're now going to have to change the way they have thought about noise threshold completely. Like the way that you think about tweaking your V-Ray settings is going to go away, right?
Yes. And the difference in noise, if we keep to the analogy of the target and the hole sizes compared to the distribution, the difference is that the old noise threshold was a float value, like a value of brightness.
Right. So it was like the people would know is like they would control it by doing a noise threshold of 0.01 or 0.005 or whatever it is, right?
0.001, because the dark areas wouldn't get clean.
Right.
And that, unfortunately, it meant that 301, it's good for data which is very low. But it was also applied in SP2 as a discriminator to values that were maybe 5 float.
Right.
And so any pixels in the highlight we changed even below the human visibility was being sampled because the noise threshold was
so
low.
Yeah. And so highlights would take forever to render.
Forever, because you needed to.
Right. So there's a lot of things that we used to do. Obviously, we used to gamma up the image or have V-Ray see the image gammaed up. So the samples
gammaed
would.
And yeah. So, yeah, expose the. Render the scene with 2 stops up and then.
Right. And so there's a lot of things that were going on in that way, and that would help a little bit. But this is different. So now you don't really have a noise threshold anymore, right?
You don't in the same sense.
So what are the values? Explain to people how the values work and what are these new numbers I have to work with?
Okay, so far it's been kept. I suppose it will be kept exactly as it is. There is no reason to change it. But the important thing is to know that now if I put 1 into the noise threshold, I'm instructing V-Ray to stop sampling when the difference between pixels or rather, to be very specific, it's within the pixel. So V-Ray, at each sample that it casts within the pixel, will figure out if the new sample is actually, with one into the noise threshold, 100% different than the previous one.
Okay.
If it is more than 100% in difference, then it will shoot more samples in it. If it is less, it will stop. So one into the noise threshold is 100%. 0.01 is 1%.
Mm-hmm.
So what you tell V-Ray these days with a noise threshold is look at my image as a whole. That's important. It's a second part that's been added to the sampling is the dynamic noise threshold.
Okay.
We'll talk about that later. But it's one first move into staring at the image as a whole. That's quite new, if you think about it.
Hmm.
We generally, at most, we look into a kernel. So we choose an area of 2 pixels, and that's where we look. Now V-Ray takes, after a few passes, it realizes a few pixels have been dealt with, and it will analyze the image again to find, lowering the noise threshold, to find new pixels to look at. But
mm-hmm.
we'll get into this. Basically, what we do now with a 0.01 noise threshold is to tell V-Ray, look at pixels in the image which are further apart than 1%, and keep sampling them until they are below 1%.
Okay.
If
so the values are the same, it's just that they don't mean the same thing anymore in a sense.
Exactly.
Right.
So
the noise threshold is a different analogy of using it, and you could get away with a higher noise threshold in general.
Generally, you can actually get images which are cleaner looking than the old settings with higher settings in the noise threshold.
Right.
However, there is really no correspondence. Because, of course, the scene could have been dark or a scene could have been bright. And one very good thing of the new sampler is that given its percentage base rather than absolute value, it's a lot less sensitive to the lighting levels in your scene.
Right.
So gone are the days where we needed to stop up the dark scenes. We worked on, the Giants layer in 2 different companies.
Yep.
Did you work on Oblivion as well?
I did work on Oblivion.
Good. I did work on Oblivion too, and we had one shot of the drones in dark.
Yeah.
We could only see the red eye into the bunker.
Yep.
And that one was ugly.
Yeah, it's pretty noisy.
yes. And it was incredibly difficult to clean because of the metal.
And then other ones where we had to deal with the eye and going through all that glass and refraction. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Remember those?
Yeah.
They were all modeled with the correct lenses.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, we measured it exactly. We actually got the prop of the eye so we could measure those lens exactly so we would get the proper refraction.
Yes, and I remember seeing it and going, oh my.
Yeah.
And I'm the one who did this. Oh my.
Yeah.
But we did. It was a bit tricky, but we did.
Yeah, it would be a very different thing today if we had run it in V-Ray.
The beauty is that we wouldn't have spent a week of renders for the sequence going to post, the post people yelling at us for the quality of it, and we looking at them and going, it's already taking so many hours per frame. Do you really want us to push it? Can you not do something?
Yeah.
And we ended up rendering that particular shot, I think, 3 stops higher.
Yeah.
Well,
let's go through. Okay, so I want to summarize a few things because we have a lot of other things we want to cover. But so this new variance-based adaptive sampling, it's a new way of sampling that V-Ray has been using. It's actually pretty advanced, and I don't think anyone has anything like this. So you will be very, very, most users will be very, very pleased to see this. In order to sort of get an idea of how well it works, you really should try it in progressive mode because you can see how quickly it cleans itself up. So those of you who've used progressive mode or use V-Ray RT, check that out and you'll see like, oh, wow, see that? See how the shadows get cleaned up faster. See how the glossiness levels get cleaned up faster. The other interesting thing to see, just to get an idea of it, and I should also note that Lele is actually going to be working a lot with us to do some of these posts on Labs itself, so we'll have more sort of studies to get a better in-depth view of what these things are, because it's really cool. And you can look at the samples itself. You'll see how much more focused the samples are. They're not sort of a scattered, like, oh, I need some samples here, I need some samples there. No, it's very much focused on the areas of where those samples are needed. So really kind of
One thing that I can report is it's biased. I agree. I mean, I worked 6 months on theory craft of this stuff and so on. So, of course, I'm somehow biased towards it. But the feeling, if I have a feeling as a user preparing those samples, of course, I had to fire up a Service Pack 2 version of V-Ray and a Service Pack 3 of it. So I had two different Max versions.
Mm-hmm.
And when I had to do the renders with the Service Pack 2 as a reference, after a while they were starting rendering, I was looking at it and going, why are you doing this? No.
Yeah, you start to realize why, and it's nothing that, I mean, this is a common thing with all rendering, but it's just that this one seems so much smarter, right? So that's
you can't go back.
Right.
Honestly, it's difficult to go back.
Yeah. And I think there's always been a joke. I was talking about it with Stephen Parker, who's in the office with me, and we were having an argument about bias versus unbiased. And he goes, well, you know, the thing is, the word unbiased just sounds sexier. It sounds like the other one is wrong because it's biased. It doesn't mean anything. It's like you can just change it to say unbiased is also unsmart, right? This is way smarter way of sampling. So it makes
running joke in ray tracing, right?
Yeah.
And if you ask, it's not me because I don't write many ray tracers, but if you ask those that actually did, they can tell you that any student in informatics can write you an unbiased ray tracer.
Yeah, well, that's easy because you just sample everything. You're not actually trying to be smart and find places to go, right?
Exactly.
Bias is actually the thing that makes it smarter, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's knowing where to cut corners so that the human brain doesn't perceive them. That's
right.
The difficult.
Yeah, and therefore you get results faster. So another side effect, and I'm just glossing over it, but also things like alpha channels and other elements get cleaner as well. Motion blur is cleaner as well. Depth of field is cleaner. So all of those things happen, and we'll see some demos of those things specifically that we're going to be putting
and
in there.
It's also very important because some of the data passes would need, especially if you had motion blur and depth of field, would need a wee bit, even if they just rendered on black or something.
Right.
They needed a bit of render time.
Right. Just to be able to clean up those alphas, right?
Exactly. And this new sampler is so much quicker in putting the alpha channel in its place. It's really 5-6 antializing pixels and it's done.
Yeah.
Then it just fills it in, but it's really, really, really well shaped out from the get.
So just a quick
samples, people will make the mind sample.
Yeah, so quick summary is that basically your default globals will be different a little bit unless you select it not to be when you open up an old scene. But if you open up a new scene, you create a new scene, it'll be different, right? It'll be on by default. This new variance-based adaptive sampler will be on by default.
The skipping of the local settings.
And the skipping of the local settings. So all your lights and materials subdivisions are going to be ignored automatically when you start off a new V-Ray. So that's something.
Set up lights, your shaders as they look good, and then just press render. It'll be quick and show you what it is right away.
So it's a really kind of a big deal. And then everything else will be. So really get ready to sort of try this new thing and you'll start to realize how cool it is. Now I'm going to go through some of the other ones real quick, but I want to sort of touch base on this. So ray trace rounded corners, kind of a big deal as well. We've got this is based on a patent that we've got licensed from NVIDIA. So NVIDIA's had this license and it's been used in mental ray for a while. But it's basically these smooth edges for rounded corners, which is a really nice way of doing things. We got the license for that. And then obviously since we licensed it, we are free to improve on it ourselves, and which we have. And so we've got a really, really nice implementation of this new rounded corners things. Can you go over some of the things that it highlights that are available for it?
Yep. It's another step in the direction of automatism without compromising on quality. So it's able to treat automatically concave and convex edges.
Yep.
Either or both together.
Mm-hmm.
And it supports individual objects for edge detection or multiple objects.
So you can just put a cylinder inside of a cube and it'll automatically put an edge in there. You don't have to join them together, right?
Absolutely.
Right.
The other little tiny bit is that it works really well with displacement.
Oh, that's also nice. So if you have something with displacement and you want to have a hard edge, you can go bloop and it'll just add it to it.
Absolutely not. And in fact, this is, so if we want to say technically, first it evaluates the curved normal and then it displaces based on that curved normal.
Oh, okay. So there's an order of operation that's important for people to realize. Yeah.
And it's really working well from the very early tests. It's something that people just go, it works.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's actually very few things that you need to worry about on this, and it's very clean, right?
Yes, just don't make the size so big that it covers all of your objects.
Right, exactly. And it is, and it's different. It now, from what I gather, is this actually doing it as an actual object-based thing, or is it doing it as a bump map thing? Because before we used to do it just as a fake bump map thing, right?
It's a bump map, yes.
It is, okay.
So you can do it, that's the point. You could do it per shader. So you can go into each and every shader and copy and paste the same bump map, because the beauty is that it would be exactly the same, be the object concave or convex or multiple objects sharing the same shader or not.
Right.
If you want the object to share the same rounded corner,
right,
off you, one shader for everyone.
Right.
Or you can use the V-Ray bump material.
Okay.
And so apply that and pipe in all the materials you want,
yeah,
multi-sub-object with all the materials in your scene, and it will get applied to your scene.
Right.
So it's very good.
And that's what allows you not to worry about things like the displacement, and you can use it on proxies and everything, right?
And a shout out to the old colleagues into car making, our mm-hmm. renders.
Mm-hmm.
If you go on the forums, some guy actually posted a sample of pieces of a car bonnet. They come from CAD. The edges are exactly coincident, but there is no fillet.
Right.
And of course, they're coming from CAD data, so they're seriously triangulated. It's not a mesh that you really would like to touch.
Yep.
And now it doesn't matter anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, this is something I think is important from the architecture point of view as well, right? Because I think architects could benefit from this a great deal. A lot of people, especially in the archivist community, tend to just make, a square column is a square, right? And so the edge is infinitely sharp on that because that's the way that the geometry is. When really in real life, there is a very slight bevel on everything, which creates a slight highlight on that edge. An edge, if you look at it in photography, doesn't necessarily have a sharp, sharp edge. So even in architecture, just a slight amount of bevel on every single corner can highly enhance things and basically make the entire image pop a little bit, because you'll get either a slight darkening or a slight highlight on that corner, which will make it stand out a little bit, right?
And, we've both been doing a bit of art biz.
Mm-hmm.
Hands up, wants to model a fillet on every piece of geometry.
Yeah, no, you don't want to do that, right? And it's just done. Yeah. And then you just created all this extra geometry, and yeah, it's a really nice way to work.
The beauty of it is that it doesn't care if it's triangles or quadrangles. It finds out the edges where they are based on concavity or convexity, mm-hmm. and it works. I actually tried it on a very old 3DS file, and, it kind of worked there too, so that was impressive.
Yeah, that's cool. That's very cool. All right, so that's another make feature that is cool to want to highlight. And another one that I think is really interesting is the new sky model we're talking about.
Yes. Funnily enough, it's I didn't know how chaos could come up constantly with innovations, but I know now.
Mm-hmm.
My job task for September was take pictures of skies.
Okay.
So that's what I did, because I tested the early version of the COSAC model, and I wasn't very sure what was going down by the horizon.
Mm-hmm.
I told Vlad I wasn't quite happy with it and that I had better skies out of my window. And he said, fine, you do that. So I took a number of panoramas and HDRs of both sunsets and blue skies, which I very carefully calibrated, of course,
mm-hmm.
and then sent them over as EXRs to main office in Sofia.
Mm-hmm.
And duly enough, they made changes, I suppose, also based on those. And the model that will be released actually matches them quite closely indeed, if you put the sun at the same height and you match the humidity in the air. So that, with the aerial perspective, which is, Leonardo da Vinci's wet dream come true.
Right.
We're 500 years on, we've got this in Vera. It's great, and it works really, really well. Actually.
So let's go through some of these a little quickly. So basically, the HOSIC sky model simulates a more natural, looking sky.
It's the sky dome.
It's a sky dome. Okay. Yeah. And
then we have the sky, the aero perspective, which will take the rays from there and scatter them, like it happens in our atmosphere.
Right. Okay.
And that means that, you know, you get the dead queuing of stuff going in the distance, which becomes less saturated and whiter, so to speak.
Right. So it actually, if you have, you know, buildings or mountains in a distance, they will tint accordingly, right?
Yes. And the thing is, I can hear people saying, hey, but I could do that with polymetric fog and whatever. Now, yes, wait until you try the aero perspective.
That's yeah, it basically gives proper depth cue to everything.
And it renders in no time.
That's right, because you don't have to worry about fog, right? It just does it correctly in the...
It does it correctly. It's very easy to control. It's got three controls for height and depth and to affect or not affect the environment.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so you could have it standing there and do whatever you want, or you could have it block somehow and absorb the...
Right.
Skylight, if you had it.
Right.
But it's really very simple. Again, it's something that you normally throw on, set up with two sliders because it's yours to customize,
mm-hmm.
and then just press render. It really, really renders quick.
Right. And so it looks, and it looks aware. I mean, there's some samples out there that I'm sure people will like to see, and it's really pretty, pretty awesome
yes,
to see.
One that the 3D Office gave me that I rendered. Remember, that one probably would be a good one to show it off because there are hills in the distance and you can see the fog. Actually, I played with it a tiny bit so that it would. I made an animation of the sun rising, and with the sun rising, the ground heats up, and what looked like a low mist becomes proper aerial perspective.
That's pretty amazing, yeah. So it actually kind of like...
It's really one slider animated, that's it.
Yeah, and it basically, the mist rises, and so it gets more, it's interesting.
Exactly, and it looks so good. Really looks so good.
Right, based on the height of the sun in the sky, it can affect basically how much atmosphere gets affected based on the natural way that the sun heats up the ground around it. Another thing I want to talk about the ground is there actually an option to affect the sun and sky based on ground color, correct?
Yeah, exactly. So it can actually act as a blocking volume mm-hmm. for sky, or if you have some very special setup by which the sky is not intense enough and you find it difficult to balance whatever custom lighting setup you've got, you can just turn it off and you can author it without a problem of changing the lighting in your scene.
Right. Okay. Well, that's pretty cool. I think that's something that people should definitely be playing around with and realize that, you know, sun and sky, which some people just put in there as quickly, but they basically want to like, it's almost like I'll use it for now just to get the rough lighting sometimes, but they want to do something. This brings a new level of sun and sky that people may actually look at and say, oh, this
indeed.
Is really...
And in conjunction with the color mapping changes,
mm-hmm.
We're now from start to end in sRGB,
yep.
color space, whereas before we went through Psi RGB, and because of... coding advantages.
Mm-hmm.
However, the new color mapping, color conversion and color mapping is, wow, it's so much more lifelike. People would know that sometimes the sky would show, the old sky would show a bit too much green for comfort. Sometimes sun combination will look a bit like dreary days rather than sunny middays.
Right.
And that was due to the color conversion. Now they will look exactly as you'd expect them. And as you experience them in real life, they're more orange. The blue is bluer. And it also affects, of course, I'll just be touching by it, anything that was expressed in Kelvin.
Right.
Because that, rather than straight color. If you had your light set up with a red or white color, no problem. You won't see any change. If you had your light set up with Kelvin, that means that... Well, technically, everything is white balanced at 6,500K, so D65 white balance. So if you have a light with 6,500 Kelvin, white balance for the camera is, by default, if it's off, it's D65, you get white.
Yeah, cool.
Very simple. So it should be another step towards predictability, so to speak.
Yeah.
There's nothing worse than trying something, pressing a button, expecting to do something, and it does anything but.
Okay. So, very cool. Well, I want to try to get through some of these because we got a couple, well, several more to go through. So definitely try to play it. No, it's all good. Let's go through. Definitely try the new Sky Mall. The Hosek Sky is really pretty cool. Another thing that's interesting that people have been asking for is triplanar mapping, obviously. And triplanar mapping is basically an idea that it receives a UV map depending on what direction the face is, and there's edge blending that happens between that. It's a pretty nice way to sort of splatter a texture across everything in a very predictable and smooth way. Yeah.
Please, come on.
What's that?
Ends up who likes to do UVs.
Yeah, I know. It's like, sometimes you need UVs for very specific things, but if you want to just basically put a rock texture across a bunch of stuff, it's going to be much easier with triplanar mapping.
It's not for everything. You don't want to do it.
No, but it's something that people have been asking for, and now it's in there. So for those of you who've been looking for triplanar, it's really nice.
And actually, I suppose I can safely say this because it's public. Neil Blevins, famous for scripting the triplanar mapping, actually worked in conjunction with Blado in the forums and in the beta, feeding back information and requests to him.
Yeah.
So it actually went through, I think, three revisions, which got it better, better, and better.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Neil Blevins is a pretty awesome guy, so for sure.
Yes, he is. He's really, really cool.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's actually a coded version of what Neil Blevins distributed over the years.
Right. Yeah, so. Absolutely. So the other thing new in version 3 of V-Ray is we had a V-Ray Clipper, which basically allows you to basically section your model. It's basically a real-time Boolean or a Boolean render time Boolean that happens where you cut objects and you can do a cutaway, which is really nice because a lot of people, especially in the architecture field, I mean, that's something I used to love to do is you have a model of a building and you want to slice the building, it'll slice it really nice at render time as opposed to chopping the geometry, right? But now what allows it to do is you can actually use custom arbitrary meshes and you're basically creating a render time Boolean of any arbitrary mesh, which is kind of nice.
It's like we bust for this for a million years and in usual Loki, it gets added to a service pack.
Yeah.
Yes, we have full-blown render time Booleans with arbitrary meshes.
Yeah.
The Clipper allows you to pick an object and use that. And
yep.
You can do anything. You will see into the SP3 preview video, which has been put together at the Sofia office.
Yeah,
a slice of cake being beaten. In.
Yeah, and to like with some noisy thing that basically as it cut across. Yeah,
The look of the result is wow.
Yeah. It's pretty good. Yeah. It's really nice to see that. And let's just look at it in terms of an arbitrary, anyone who wants to do sections, because those always are looks great. And, I've seen people do sections of, engines, right? Or like a car engine or a section of a building. And now instead of just having a single planar cut, you could actually do a build exactly like I want to cut and then I want to cut in more here, cut in less here. And so it'll actually allow you to have more control over where your section is and could be pretty interesting for people to see that kind of stuff.
In good style, of course, it shows you previews in the viewport and it's quick and it renders very quick. So it's not something that one has to think twice about using because, it will slow my renders down and whatever. No. If it's there, it's actually because it's usable.
Yeah. Okay, and now this comes up to another very, very important thing, and it's the stochastic flicks. I want to get into this one a little bit because those of you who've used a V-Ray car paint or used the flakes material that we've used in the past, which is based on the car paint, obviously, may know that the car paint flakes before was basically creating an arbitrary flake map, but it was basically a map, right? And now it's a stochastic flake. It's way, way more realistic and predictable and extremely good to the point where this is the proper way to do metal flake on buildings or on car paint, and it's significant improvement over the way that flake material looks on car paint, as an example, right?
Indeed. It has been developed by Asen, which is a lovely guy at Chaos.
Yeah.
He's so young, it makes me angry.
But yeah.
He's so smart.
Yeah, and he's doing a bunch of other stuff which we're not going to talk about, we're not going to talk about that yet, but this is the first thing that he's sort of like one of the things he's put out there that I think is like, wow, just those of you who've ever done car paint, I highly, highly recommend you guys look at this new stochastic flake. It's going to be significant. And those of you who don't do car paint but want to look at things like sand and snow and get all those light little specks that come up on things, this is the...
Do you not have the sparkly shoes for ladies and all the products?
Anything that sparkles. You want to do a bowling ball? You know,
yes, exactly.
I'm in our office in Culver City, and I've got all this foam on the wall that's, you know, the egg crate type foam stuff, and it's got all this sparkle that's in it because of the way that this thing is built, and I could make this would be perfect for exactly that kind of stuff. So
precisely. It's highly customizable. The very big key difference between the stochastic approach and the map-based approach is chiefly memory usage.
Right, because the other one had to make a map and put it in memory, right?
And not only that, the part that was really, really memory intensive was the elliptical filtering, anisotropic of the flakes.
Right.
Because as we all know, the tiny little details across frames in animation, they flicker. They're tiny, and basically the renderer doesn't really know what to do with them. So you can end up oversampling stuff that's a quarter of a pixel or less, and then the next frame it's disappearing because it's in the middle of 2 pixels and whatever not.
Right.
And the filtering was done to very, very high quality to compensate for it. It required a lot of RAM.
Right.
So it could take up actually my pants with car rendering at RPT in Munich. Some of the renders were actually taking half the RAM because of the very, very, very high resolution flakes.
Right.
So yeah. You'd get a car into an environment and half the RAM was flakes.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy. But that's all really cool. All right. Again, we're sort of running out of time, so I want to before, but check out the new flake stuff because it's really cool. I want to touch on a very important thing that's happening in global illumination because there's been some improvements on here that are significant, and I want people to understand what they are. Now, it's just going to notice, basically what our press release will say is that there's a more robust way of doing reflective GI caustics for better light propagation and more natural illumination for interior scenes. That sounds nice, but let's talk about what that is specifically, because V-Ray has been around for a long, long, long time. And reflective caustics is something that was always traditionally very expensive to do. Now, it's now we've changed the way that the reflective caustics are. I've got some feedback. That's all right. So we're changing the way reflective caustics are. And what that's doing is it's creating a what's the better way to do it? It's the reflective caustic itself now can be turned on by default. It is on by default. So that creates more accurate overall global illumination, and your scenes are actually going to appear the more correct brightness overall. And it will do it in the same amount of time that it did it before when it was off.
Indeed.
Okay.
Yes. It's basically a free effect.
Yeah. Yes. So your overall lighting scenes will look brighter and more correct, so there'll be less contrasting because you'll have more light going into areas that were GI is affected. So specifically, bright white rooms, bright interiors will look a lot better, they'll look better. Like, oh wait a minute, why does that? It'll just have that oomph that people have been will notice for sure. So just so you guys know, especially you architecture interior guys out there, This is something that's on by default, and it's going to change the way that it looks. So if you start rendering your scene and you start realizing that things look brighter in the GI, and that's the reason. And it is a much better way of doing things.
Yes, they look brighter in the places where before there was a dark splotch.
Right.
I mean, it's where the other one wouldn't calculate the caustics. We're talking about GI reflective caustics. So
right.
Don't go expecting, you know, the shapely patterns of the
No. This is a different. It's an important distinction. It's basically it's part of the GI calculation comes. You know, is split into two different areas. There's an area that's basically based on diffuse light bouncing, and the other one is the specular light bouncing. The specular light bouncing is actually called a caustic. So people sort of need to sort of realize that difference. But it does affect the overall diffuse lighting as well.
Yes, let's say that those bright, say when you had an interior rendered with sunlight, where the sunlight would hit, it would then bounce out a lot of diffuse lighting.
Right.
But it wasn't taken into account to the same extent.
Right.
Now you will see literally the reflection of the pool on the floor onto your wall and the reflection from the wall onto your roof, so to speak.
Right. Yep. And then also other thing that I think is good, I think that we can just touch on this, but distributed now the light cache itself can be distributed. So that means that before, when we were doing light cache calculations, it was done on the host machine, and they would wait till the host machine was done. It would distribute that back to the distributed machines. Now light cache itself can also be distributed, which speeds that light cache calculation as well. So if you're doing distributed rendering, or DR rendering, as some people like to call it, light cache will also be distributed, which is a nice advantage to have at this point as well.
Especially for architectural visualization.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of people use DR, so it's a very good one.
Yeah.
Now, I'm only going to touch on GPU rendering quickly because we have a few more things that we want to do and kind of running out of time. But I want to make people realize that besides adding new texture nodes that are supported by GPU, proxies, hair, light includes and exclude lists, a bunch of other GPU renderings are happening. I think people need to realize that GPU rendering in V-Ray is something that they should really, really consider doing. For those, long gone are the days where you try GPU rendering, it didn't work, and you stop using it. It is really very much a viable thing to use at this point.
Indeed. And I guarantee you all that it's been heavily worked on every single day.
Absolutely. We have a department that's dedicated to a lot of the GPU improvements, and it's a major, major thing. People are doing projects all on GPU these days. So it's not necessarily something that should be considered, GPU rendering in V-Ray is whatever. And because it isn't, right? I mean, we've definitely got one of the best GPU renderers out there. And I think I can say that with confidence because I've tried a whole bunch of them.
I actually spent a lot of time benchmarking.
Yeah, and we've benchmarked them, and this is really good. I mean, the whole point of GPU rendering is that, I'm actually thinking of Blago is one of the main guys behind GPU rendering. He's a hilarious guy.
Yes.
And very, very bright as well, and he knows so much about parallel processing that it's something I'm going to capitalize on, and I'm going to actually work with him to sort of educate people on what GPU rendering is about. So look forward to that. But what I would say is the GPU list is continuing to be built on. It's going to continue to get faster. And I would encourage people to try it for sure.
Yes, I've lost count of the people who said GPU rendering, V-Ray, well, meh. And I'm like, when did you last try it? 2.x.
Yeah, or something. They tried it like 3 years ago or something and they didn't do it.
Exactly.
Yeah, and no, it's a huge amount of change. Yeah, huge amount of change. Highly recommend it. You know, just look at the GPU you have. Consider the fact that it actually has a huge amount of cores in it that can actually massively accelerate things. And if you have questions about GPU rendering or questions about it, don't be afraid. You know, let's go ahead and ask them, put them on the forum, or you can ask wherever. Yeah, because there's ways that are, it's going to change a little bit the way you have to think about things.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed. But it's really, really worth it. It's fast. It's pretty much, it gives you exactly the same scene as the offline CPU render, provided, of course, you're not using features which are not in RT, which are less and less by the day, and they're being covered.
Right.
Not to worry. So you can still get to the end of a production with GPU rendering.
Sure.
No problem today.
Yeah, so, and so this is and this is basically in the RT mode. But you know, if you go to think about the way that RT works, obviously progressive sampling has also been improved as well. It's more.
It's been brought to the GPU as well.
Yeah.
It uses QMC.
Yep.
For we don't have it for CPU rendering, but we do have QMC.
For the GPU. Yep. Yeah. And again, QMC sampling is an important thing that people need to realize. QMC actually is patented, and we have been given license to do that by NVIDIA because NVIDIA owns a license to QMC. So we're one of the few render engines out there that actually has license to use QMC. So it's something that's important to people.
Very good. Yeah. And we are the only ones which has that in conjunction with the two technologies of
right.
Rados development.
Yeah,
so sampler with dynamic noise threshold and the new sampler.
Yes. So it's and that really just basically means that you're going to get clean renders much faster.
Basically, it comes down to
that. Clean render is faster. Just if you take away from that, that's what you.
Simply then the final render where one can even say send it to render and come back the next day.
Mm-hmm.
It's your daily workflow which is going to change greatly.
Right.
Your look development will be a breeze. I guarantee you that. You just leave it open and play around with things, and it just works.
Yep.
It's really, really pretty and easy to use these days.
Yeah, very cool. All right, so the other thing that's happening is volume rendering.
Yes.
We've added probabilistic sampling in volume rendering. And that is... It's kind of a cheat. Let's just put it that way. I'm going to be honest with people, but it your volume renderings can go significantly faster from probabilistic sampling, and it'll so your clouds effects like that. I mean, they'll just render significantly faster with this new probabilistic sampling. So, if you are doing effects with steam or smoke or any kind of atmospheric effect, just try the new probabilistic sampling. It'll definitely improve what you're doing by a lot.
Indeed. There are caveats, keeping in the honesty,
yeah.
In that very, very transparent volumes are not very well suited to the technology.
Right.
Yeah. Then again, it's a checkbox.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So if the old sampler was doing a better brute force job in the specific scene, just turn it off.
Yeah. Exactly.
And you get similar renders. I mean, by performance here, I'm saying, say it takes a minute to render a volume, you turn probabilistic sampling on, and it takes 20 seconds, then you know it's working right.
Right.
And you look at it, it looks exactly the same.
Right.
If you turn probabilistic rendering on, and it takes a minute and a half, you know you want to render it out, because it looks the same, but it takes slower.
Yeah.
But it's really not a big deal.
Yep.
Typically, it works... with huge, and I mean huge, I won't say it because it's not believable, but with dense volumes, say pyroclasts mm-hmm. from volcanoes and such,
mm-hmm.
speed bumps were an order of magnitude.
Yeah.
I said it.
Yep. No, it's true.
It's true, but it's not across the board. It can be slightly.
Yeah, it depends. It depends. It really is scene dependent, but something definitely to look at is that you can get massive changes.
Say an average of 2 times faster from the same point.
Yep.
So I rendered it. It's something that people don't do normally is render volumes with anti-aliasing. They do volume passes without anti-aliasing or very little. Well, I have a sample which rendered with depth of field
mm-hmm.
in. And it's the rocket sample from Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
It means I have a 2K screen covered by 95% of smoke.
Right.
And that renders in minutes.
Yeah.
Like that. It's not believable.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. And then the last thing, and we were kind of joking about this yesterday, is like, oh, yeah, and by the way, you know, proxies, objects, and instances are about, on average, about 30 times faster or 30% faster. Which is significant because that basically means that a lot of people out there do use a huge amount of proxies and instances, especially people doing massive environment work or things of that nature, and that those renderings will be faster. And the reason it's faster is that it's able to keep it in memory a lot more efficiently and basically ray trace it way more efficiently.
It's doing a better job of doing the, let's say, the acceleration structure.
The acceleration structure, exactly.
So it's doing a better job of it. And so if you threw away everything else that Chaos gave you for SP3 and just kept this one, the same thing that you loaded with the old sampler and whatever not, and you just rendered it, it would just go 30% on average faster.
Right. So that's a pretty nice improvement.
Yes, it's the last point. Clearly, it's the least important of them all.
Right.
But yeah, 30% right there. Put all together, the of course, the millage may vary depending on the scene, but it's we haven't had a report yet of a scene actually going slower and looking worse.
Yep. Well, cool. Listen, this service pack, as of us recording it today, it's actually not out, but by the time this comes out, it will be out. So those of you who use it, try it out. I know that this podcast is way more V-Ray-centric than I've done. It's funny because I everyone joking about the fact that my podcast doesn't really talk about V-Ray that much, but I believe that this is an important one for us to discuss some of these things. And I thought it would be a good idea for Lily and I to just say, hey, there's some crazy shit going down on this specific one that we need to make sure people out there know what they are, and it not just look at a feature list and say, okay, this actually, you know, those of you listening, if you are, you know, big V-Ray users or you know stuff, this is going to change the way you think. So I thought it would be good for us to put it out there. And
what you can take away from the very long podcast is we are going in the direction where you do your look dev at your heart's content and then just press the render button and get the cleanest, quickest image out.
Yeah, we're definitely going in that direction. I think it's important that we know that, you know, we have a variety of customers out there, that some people that use a lot of settings and some people that use very few settings. And we're trying to make it simpler for everyone so that they can focus on
making it simple for everyone. We're leaving a choice to everyone.
Yeah.
So nothing stops anybody from going back in and customizing the heck out of every single setting.
Right, exactly.
It's a choice.
Yep.
By default, it's not active. Tick a box, go back to your old ways.
Yep.
No problem.
Cool. All right, Lele, this has been fun. You want to do it again sometime?
Absolutely. Well, we're colleagues now, so yeah.
And also, you know, you and I have to come up with a new slogan because as you probably know from the podcast, we always like we're going to let the last bucket drop, but I don't think buckets are going to be around much longer.
No, I don't think so either.
Yeah,
some still love them, but and of course some improvements have been made there too. But yeah, who cares anymore?
Yeah, I think we're gonna have to think about something that's related to samples. So we'll brainstorm of a new sign off for the podcast. Maybe we'll unveil it sometime in 2016. So
absolutely.
All right. Well, cool.
All right.
Appreciate it. Love having you on. Have a wonderful holiday, Christmas, New Year's. Lele, if I don't speak to you sooner than that, which I probably will, but have a great one.
Yeah, we shall. We've got the release to get going.
Yeah. All right, man. Take care. Bye.
All right, then. Have a good evening. Bye-bye.